thank you. So I thought that Anna's talk was a really nice lead-in to what I'm about to talk about, which is kind of how we can incorporate things, the fact that, for example, hip-hop and tobacco are being aligned in social media, how we can incorporate that into our tobacco prevention efforts and also our prevention of risk behaviors for adolescents and young adults more broadly. I'd like to thank my co-author, Jeffrey Jordan, who conveniently will be giving the final presentation of the day, and also our other co-author, Maya Zakaria, both of whom are with Rescue Social Change. We have a few disclosures. I started working with Rescue a few years ago as a subject matter expert on one of their interventions that FDA was funding, and Jeff and Mayo both work for Rescue Social Change, and I'm going to briefly mention one of their interventions at the end. So what I'm going to talk about today are some of the particular challenges of working with adolescents and young adults and how we communicate health information to them. I'm going to talk a bit about audience segmentation and targeting as strategies to enhance the effectiveness of our communications, and then more specifically talk about the concept of adolescent peer crowds as a particular way to think about the adolescent audience and design targeted materials. So McGuire's hierarchy of effects model tells us that before we can even start to begin thinking about inducing any attitude or behavior change in our audience, we first need to expose them to our message, obviously. The audience then needs to pay attention to the message, and then they need to kind of like and continue paying attention and continue maintaining some form of engagement with that message. For those of us who work with adolescents and young adults, we may have encountered a few features of this unique audience that makes it difficult to kind of expose them to our messages and then continue through that hierarchy of effects. Maybe if you have a teenage son or daughter at home, you can relate to this as well. So first, younger people are more prone to reactance, which is a psychological phenomenon that causes people to resist messages that they perceive as taking away their freedom. So young people are at this age where they're starting to develop new freedoms, and yet they're still kind of facing the constraints of home and also school. So they're particularly prone to resisting messages that they perceive as trying to tell them what to do. Younger people are also really susceptible to peer influence, and this can be particularly difficult for health communication messages to counterbalance when they perceive their peers doing one thing and we are trying to tell them to do something different. And then finally, adolescents and young adults live in a really cluttered media environment. There's some research, and this is a few years old, so I'm sure there's something a little bit more updated, but You can see that they're spending on average about 7.5 hours a day with media, and a lot of this time is using two screens at once, so texting while they watch TV, things like that. So it can be really hard for us to get our media campaigns in the face of these young people, let alone having them even pay attention to what we're trying to say. Audience segmentation and targeting are known strategies that can increase the effectiveness of our health communication materials. So audience segmentation, just to kind of throw out a few definitions, is selecting a target population or breaking your population into groups based on one or more shared characteristics. And then targeting is the act of designing materials specifically to appeal to and persuade that audience segment. This allows us to design and disseminate our messages in a way that makes them more likely to reach, appeal to, and then persuade that targeted population. But there's not an awful lot of guidance as to the best criteria for segmenting our audience. So ideally, we want to segment our audience on a shared risk behavior, so people who are prone to tobacco use or alcohol use. Ideally, that audience segment should also have some type of shared determinant of risk behavior that we can focus our message on. We'd like for there to be some type of shared channel for dissemination so that we can efficiently place our messages in the media most likely to be used by this audience. And then finally, it would be really nice for our audience segments to also have some type of shared value or norm, and also different types of stylistic cues. So this can help us design messages that are more likely to grab the attention of and be liked by our target audience. So typically, we see lots of campaigns segmenting audiences based on sociodemographics, so gender, ethnicity, age, maybe geography. But for adolescents, the concept of a peer crowd is one potential strategy that could be a really effective way to segment one's audience. So a peer crowd is kind of a macro-level subculture based on shared norms, values, styles, and behaviors. And I want to draw the distinction between a peer group or kind of small, geographically located group of friends and a crowd, which is much more a wider network, so to speak, of adolescents who have never even met each other. So you can get people in the same crowd, the hip-hop crowd, for example, living in California and living in Maine, dressing very similarly, listening to the same music, who have never even met each other. So in the literature, four broad classes of crowds have been commonly identified over the past 3-4 decades in all sorts of geographies, including non-U.S. context. So the preppy or the popular crowd is made up of young people who are very socially active. They like to keep up with the cultural trends. The mainstream crowd is made of young people who don't really seek to distinguish themselves from their peers. So they may be very academically inclined or involved in school. They tend to stay out of trouble and don't really dress in any type of outlandish way. The alternative crowd is kind of a broad catch-all term for a bunch of different sub-crowds, such as skaters, as hipsters, as emo or goth. And these young people have a lot of countercultural values and styles and media preferences. And then finally, the hip-hop crowd are young people who kind of define themselves based on their interest and affiliation with hip-hop culture. So these crowds have really different cultural profiles, but for our purposes, it's really useful because they also have very different profiles of risk behavior. So we see the mainstream crowd typically exhibiting very low propensity to engage in any type of risk behavior. They don't really smoke, they don't really drink. The preppy crowd, across the literature, tends to have an elevated risk of alcohol use, but is not really at high risk for too many other behaviors. On the other hand, the alternative and the hip-hop crowd tend to have elevated risk across many types of behaviors, more likely to smoke, more likely to drink, more likely to use marijuana. And so the fact that these crowds not only vary on risk behavior, but they also vary on styles, on norms, and on media preferences make them a potentially useful way for us to think about the adolescent audience. So theoretically, there is a strong foundation for why these crowds should matter to us as public health researchers and professionals. Social identity theory tells us that individuals develop identities based on the groups or the categories that they affiliate with. So at the moment, we're probably all experiencing our public health social identity being at this conference. But for young people, the identity as a member of a broader peer crowd is often really salient. It guides how they dress, guides what they listen to, what shows they watch. And this is because when an individual identifies with a particular crowd, they develop a prototype, which is a cognitive representation of what it means to be a member of that crowd, what the typical behaviors are, the norms and the styles. And as identification with these groups increases, adherence to the group's prototype also increases. So this is why a young person who perceives smoking as being prototypical of the hip-hop crowd also also becomes more likely to smoke the more strongly they identify with that crowd. There is also theory that tells us why we should expect incorporating peer crowds into our messaging to have an effect. So this is Nori Camillo's PRISM model. One of the key hypotheses of this model is that our identity should moderate the way we interpret and respond to various stimuli. So when an individual is exposed to a message that is identity congruent, they should be expected to respond much more favorably and exhibit more behavior change than an individual who's exposed to a message that's not really geared to their peer crowd identification. When we think about the hierarchy of effects model, we can kind of see here how peer crowds increase our likelihood of getting our target population exposed to our messages because they have very distinct media use and behavioral patterns that we can disseminate our messages in. They provide us with cues to kind of call out to members of a particular crowd, thus increasing the likelihood that one attends to our message, but also increasing the likelihood that they like the message and become engaged with what we're trying to say. And then finally, crowds offer us modifiable targets of change that we can focus our messages on. And we can also work to change crowd norms as well at a more macro societal level. I want to note that this is not a particularly new concept to anybody who's been working in marketing. As you just saw in the last presentation, tobacco companies have been doing this for years and years and years. But more recently, some public health interventions have been using this approach as well. So Jeff's going to tell you a little bit more about some of these interventions, but I'm just going to briefly highlight the Commune campaign, which was in San Diego. This was Jeff's work with Pam Ling and her group up at UC San Francisco. They targeted the hipster crowd by, you know, messaging that incorporated indie rock bands and other cultural values that the crowd held dear. And what they found was that among the individuals who identified with the hipster crowd, they were much more likely to lower their smoking behavior in response to the message. Supporting this kind of community-based work is some experimental studies that I've done with Steve Sussman at USC. So we manipulated truth campaign ads to target different crowds, and youth were randomly exposed to ads who either did or did not feature their crowd that they most identified with. And what we found was that when individuals were exposed to an ad targeting their peer crowd, their susceptibility to smoking was significantly decreased. So you can see here, on those who got a message not targeting their crowd, had a 50% susceptibility rate compared to 13.5% of those who got an anti-smoking message targeting their crowd. So what we can kind of learn from this theory and this emerging evidence is that peer crowds present an innovative and potentially effective and efficient way to reach our adolescent audience and overcome challenges such as reactance to messages. We can break through cluttered media environments by using cues that these young people recognize and are attracted to. We can channel peer influence by using media and influencers who are meaningful to crowd members to change crowd norms. And so I'm going to then, I think, turn it over to Jeff now, who will kind of tell you a little bit more about some of the great work his group has been doing targeting various peer crowds. Thank you.